Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
Money FM 89.3, welcome back to Sustainable Singapore with me, Rianne Lovell-Boland. Now, Singapore's International Energy Week kicked off on Monday, and businesses now have new funds, solutions and programs to tap onto to continue decarbonising the electricity sector. Joining me on the line to share his analysis on the latest announcements from SEW 2021 and Singapore's energy transition is Professor Subodh Malsarkar, Executive Director, Energy Research Institute at NTU. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's a pleasure, Rianne.
Let's start with the two new funds, which are totaling $10 million. The first is a $4 million partnership between the Energy Market Authority and technology company Envision Digital International to help local energy companies focus on renewable energy and low-carbon solutions. So I just want to ask, you know, what was your reaction to the news?
So I think it was very encouraging to see that a global company like Envision is engaging the smaller and medium-sized companies in Singapore and also perhaps startups to see how they can benefit from Envision's digital platform. I think globally, a lot of us focus on what the larger multinationals do, and we forget that the smaller and medium-sized companies really make up the bulk of the effort from the bottom up. And I think it's important to carry the SMEs with us in addition to the large corporations. Also, if I may add, the startups are where some of the disruptive technologies come in. The startups are willing to take bigger risks and go where the multinationals may not try new things out. And I think to bring the startups and the SMEs together is an excellent idea in terms of spurring innovation and creating new ideas for our energy transition.
So on that point, do you think this funding will enable more smaller companies to contribute to Singapore's push to more greener options?
Yes, certainly. I think switching to greener options is one, but creating new greener options is also part of the game. And in that capacity, Enterprise SG has also made available new funds that would also spur partnerships in increasing the share of the green economy.
Yeah. So Enterprise Singapore, as you mentioned, it's involved in the second fund with EMA. They've partnered with JTC to launch a $6 million open call for clean energy innovations on Jurong Island. So, I mean, how significant is this to especially cut carbon emissions on Jurong Island and maybe eventually transform it to a sustainable energy park?
So our Jurong Island is where we host most of our petrochemical and heavy chemical industries. In a way, you know, Jurong Island makes us almost Houston-like. Most of us think of Singapore more keen to Manhattan, but we forget that we have a little Houston in our backyard as well. That part of Singapore, the petrochemical complexes, really contribute almost 60% to our emissions. And it's really important to address new technologies to see how the GHG emissions could be reduced from Jurong Island. Anyone who's traveled to Jurong Island or to us would also know that there are large plots of land which are yet to be fully occupied. So I think the JTC RFP that has been launched really capitalizes on those two factors, that the emissions come from Jurong Island and there is opportunity to deploy renewables there until new developments take up the space which is available there. Also, Jurong Island has really the, in addition to the land area, it has sea space attached to it. So some deployments such as floating solar or other technologies could also be trialed there. I think ultimately we will see with the solar deployments and other renewables increase in what we call decentralized energy generation. And I think this effort with JTC on Jurong Island is really an excellent trial to see how decentralization of energy resources could also be more efficient in contributing to our quest towards reducing our emissions.
Wow, 60% of emissions, that's pretty significant. And I think what I really like about this is that it's, again, as you said, the smaller SMEs are able to create solutions for this issue.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, in addition to the JTC effort, I do also want to point out that Enterprise SG has also rolled out what they call the Enterprise Financing Green Scheme earlier in the month. So I think with this scheme, ESG is willing to take 70% of the risk share and help really catalyze the development of green economy further in Singapore.
Yeah, and we do have to mention that the government will be awarding $55 million to research projects that will improve low-carbon technologies with a focus on hydrogen and carbon capture, utilization and storage, which is up from $49 million promised last year. So do you think that this shows how important Singapore is taking this energy transition journey?
Oh, absolutely. I think if you speak about energy transition, we started our energy transition almost 20 years ago when we began switching towards natural gas for our power sector. We have done extremely well, but still natural gas is a fossil fuel. And we started exploring solar. But as all of us know, even by 2 gigawatt peak of solar by 2030, that would give us only 3% of our annual electricity needs. So we need to look at beyond liquefied natural gas or solar for our decarbonization efforts. And that's where hydrogen and carbon capture comes in. Firstly, hydrogen, I mean, one can say that hydrogen is the ideal fuel because when you burn hydrogen, all that's left is water vapor. Mm-hmm. But hydrogen is expensive. And of course, we do not have enough renewables to generate hydrogen locally. Most of the hydrogen generation takes place from electrolysis, which is really run on electricity. And if that electricity is green electricity, then hydrogen truly has the opportunity to provide significant decarbonization for really the whole world. But the challenge with hydrogen is the cost. And I think efforts have been launched in this grant call that you mentioned to see how we can reduce the cost of hydrogen generation. But beyond generation, there are also challenges in storage, in transportation, and infrastructure as well as end use. And I think some of the projects funded cover this entire value chain. It's also a learning experience for us on how hydrogen could be used in a variety of sectors, including power generation, including oil refining, as well as high-value chemicals. Plus, hydrogen could also be mixed with a cooking gas and potentially we could have a hydrogen-enhanced fuel in our homes as well. So these projects help us prepare for that. Carbon capture is a related essential technology because even if we reduce the greenhouse emissions, we are already in the range of 415 ppm of CO2 in the atmosphere. And we need to figure out how to remove that part of that CO2 in the atmosphere in addition to reducing what we are emitting right now. And the best way of doing that is firstly to start with concentration of CO2 and then figuring out either we store carbon dioxide underground or we utilize it. And I think the projects which are funded focus a little bit more on the utilization aspect because Singapore does not have places like used up depleted oil wells or underground storage possibilities in Singapore are very limited. So the focus on utilization makes perfect sense. You can combine carbon dioxide with waste products from incineration, such as bottom ash, to produce construction materials. Really, the ultimate, however, would be to see the possibility of combining carbon dioxide with green hydrogen and really create synthetic fuels. If we can make synthetic fuels effectively, I think we can decarbonize at even a faster rate because a significant amount of fossil fuels are used in transportation, which is not simple for decarbonization purposes. So I think the projects which have been launched are a step in the right direction in us understanding the entire hydrogen economy, as well as us exploring the possibilities of carbon capture. But I think we need to keep in mind that these still are R&D intensive efforts. And some of the deployments of the outcomes of these projects may not happen for the next 5 or maybe even 10 years.
I just want to touch on that, you know, the R&D process and all of these open calls we've mentioned about small businesses. Do you think that they have the knowledge but potentially maybe don't have the funding? So do you think that this will actually help spur more R&D in these areas?
Yes, absolutely. I think the grant call was structured in such a way that it really invited companies to be part of the consortium which was leading the R&D efforts. So the companies are involved from day one, and that really helps in building competence and knowledge base, not just with the researchers, but also helps the companies level up and understand the challenges in these technologies and are better placed to take the results from the laboratory to the field.
Yeah, and I think the best way that we're going to tackle climate change is actually, you know, when institutions and private companies work together and governments as well.
Absolutely.
So another announcement was made by Minister for Sustainability and the Environment, Grace Fu, which was the launch of Low Carbon SG, which is an 18-month program to help raise companies' awareness of climate risks. Now, this is interesting because do you think it will help demystify decarbonisation for businesses that maybe aren't quite so familiar?
Oh, definitely. I think very few companies really understand the challenge that decarbonisation faces. And I think the announcement by the minister is very much in keeping with the Green Plan 2030, where it makes it clear that engagement at every level of the value chain is essential. And this is well understood by larger companies like Apple or Microsoft or IKEA, who have really pledged the involvement of not their own efforts, but also the efforts of their entire supply chain in decarbonization. And I think the more companies we engage and the more the conversation encompasses not just the companies, but also the citizens, the greater chance we have in tackling climate change.
Another key announcement was that Singapore plans to import 30% of energy from low-carbon sources by 2035. So I want to ask you, how will electricity imports actually help Singapore's power industry decarbonize?
At this point, most of our natural gas is coming from at least two different sources in Indonesia, as well as imports that we make from liquefied natural gas, LNG, globally. In other words, 95% of our power sector is based on fossil fuels. And this contributes to almost 40% of the emissions that Singapore puts out. So how do you transition from fossil fuels to non-fossil fuels? The first thing we discussed was using solar photovoltaics. But due to our limited land, at most, we can do maybe 3%. So for transitioning beyond that, we really need to see whether we can import green electricity. And that is the effort where, say, solar farms could be put up in Indonesia or in Australia, and electricity from these solar farms can be brought into Singapore through cable. It sounds challenging, but this has been done in other parts of the world. UK and Norway have a 500-600-kilometer power cable that connects these two islands from a green energy generation and sharing perspective. So certainly with shorter distances with Indonesia or Malaysia, this can be facilitated. Also, we have announced partnership with Laos, Thailand, and Malaysia in trial of electricity connectivity. And the target there is to bring hydropower, for example, from some of these regions into Singapore. So bringing in green electricity will help us reduce our reliance on fossil fuels. And I think it's an essential aspect of our plan to diversify our energy sources and move more and more towards green electricity.
Now, this is a question I think many people have on their minds right now due to high electricity prices. But could imported electricity mean more expensive bills for the layperson?
So I think we really need to look into the details of this. Definitely, generation of electricity and transmission will include costs. But on the other hand, I think we have seen this repeatedly. Solar photovoltaics and wind-based electricity is the lowest cost of electricity generation today by far. It's lower in cost than coal-fired power generation plants in most part of the world. So I'm also hopeful that we will continue to make progress in lowering the cost of green electricity from renewable sources. So potentially, the lower cost of green electricity can offset some of the cost in terms of transmission. But I think it all depends on the details, and we need to wait for further inputs on it. I would like to add that I think this would really provide a hedge against potential price rises from gas or other fuels that we have seen right now. So I think this is, again, diversifying the sources of electricity or energy for us. And it's definitely a move in the right direction.
And on the back of that, as I mentioned, you know, electricity prices have been going up. Many electricity players have actually left the market. But do you think this energy crunch has been a reminder of the world's dependence on fossil fuels and also a wake-up call for the global transition to clean energy?
Oh, most certainly so. I think we sometimes get carried away by the euphoria in renewable energy. But if you see the forecast, we will be reliant on fossil fuels well beyond 2050. So I think we really need to take a long-term view to see how we can minimize the use of fossil fuels, but we are in no position to eliminate it in the near future. And I think what we have seen is really over the last 10 years, a lot of countries have switched to from coal or other sources to natural gas for their electricity generation. US, for example, is almost 40% of its electricity is by natural gas. And it used to be less than 20% in the region of 2005 to 2010. So this switch is not just the US, but a number of countries have done this. And this has put pressure on the supplies of natural gas, for example, and that has led to cost increases. So the cost of fuel is one factor, but there are other factors in terms of what you mentioned in the turbulence in the retail electricity market in Singapore. And I think what we have seen to some extent is we started the open electricity market in 2018, and we had more than 12 companies be part of the open electricity market retailers aspect. And some of it, what we are seeing is companies are willing to get in when times are good. But when it's difficult from the pricing perspective or business management perspective, it's natural to see some consolidation with the weaker players who do not have a long-term sustainable business plan who may exit. Ultimately, really the retailers are buying from the wholesale market, and any turbulence in the wholesale electricity market would really create challenges from a business management perspective, and the cost base or the profitability would definitely be affected. And that's essentially, I believe, what we are seeing.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Professor Subodh Malsalkar, Executive Director, Energy Research Institute at NTU. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rianne. My pleasure.
This has been Sustainable Singapore. I'm Rianne Lovell-Boland on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.